Good morning.
Has joined.
Malco, were you the first?
Yeah, but I think someone else has joined, unless it was you.
I think it was me. But I'll ask. Good morning, anybody? Lishem Yehud Kud Shabrihu Ishkinte Bidhilu Urshimu Uthilu Uthilu Urshimu Liakta Lishem Yudhe Bavate Liyehuda Shalim Beshem Ko Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La Sok Torah Mitzvah Vaihino Amadunai Elohino Elena Maseya Deno Kunene Elena Maseya Deno Kunenehu. The fourth Aliyah is what we will study today. It consists of chapter 38 of Genesis from verse 1 to verse 30. A total of 30 verses, and the number 30 connects to the letter Lamed. And the letter Lamed is connected to teaching. So let us understand if this Aliyah, when we finish it, is connecting to teaching.
Has joined.
Chapter 38, verse 1. Vayehi ba'et ha'hi vayered Yehuda me'et echa vayet ad ish adulami ushmo chira. Vayar sham Yehuda bat ish kenani ushmo shua vayikachecha vayavo elecha v'tahar vateled bein v'yikra et shemo er v'tahar od vateled Bain Vatikra et Shemo Onan. Vatosef O Vateled Bain Vatikra et Shemo Shela Vichayavi Sivdelita Oto. Vaikach Yehuda Isha Le'er Bekoro Ushma Tamar Vayehi Er Bekor Yehuda Rab Eine Adonayo He Wahe Adanu Yo Yo Aheda Wanu He Yo Vay Mitehu Adonai Yo he wahe adanu yo, yo wahe da wadu he yo. Vayomer Yehuda la onan bo, el eshet achicha vaya bemota. V'hakem zera le'achicha v'yeda onan ki lo lo yihye hazara v'chayayim ba'el eshet achi v'shichet Artsa levilti betan zera leachiv vayera be'ene adonayo he wahe adanu yo yo aheda wandu he yo asher asa vayamet kamoto. Vayomer Yehuda Letamar Kalato Shvi Albana Beit Avicha Avich Agigdal Shela Veni Ki Amar Pen Yamut Gam Hu Kechav Vatelech Tamar Vateshev Beit Avicha Vayirbu Hayamim Vatamat Batshua Eshet Yehuda V'Nachem Yehuda V'Al Al Toze Zono Huvechira Rehu Ha'adulami Timnata Vayugad L'tamar Lemor Hinechambich Ole Timnata Lagosono Vatasar Bigde Almenuta Mealecha Vatkas Vatsaif Vatidala Vateshev Petah Einaim Asher al derech timnata kiraata ki gadal shela vehilo nitnalo leisha vayirecha Yehuda vayachsheveha lezona ki kista panecha Vayetelecha el haderech Vayomer hava na'avo elayich Ki lo yada ki kalato hi vatomer Ma titen li ki tavo elay Vayomer anochi ashalach gedi izim min hatzon vatomer im nititen eravon ad shalchecha Vayomer maha eravon asher eten lach vatomer to Kotamcha, uftilecha, umadcha, asher biyadecha, vayiten la, vayavo elecha, vatahar lo, vatakam vatelech, vatasar tzeiva. Me'alecha v'tilbash bigde almenuta. V'yishlach Yehuda et gedi ha'izim v'yad re'ehu ha'adulami l'kachat ha'eravon מיד האישה ולא מצאה. וישאל את אנשי מקומה למורה יהקדשה. היווה עיניים על הדרך. ויאמרו לו הייתה בזה קדשה. Vayashav el Yehuda, Vayomer lo mitzatiha, Vegam anshe hamakom amru lo, Haita vaze kedesha, Vayomer Yehuda taika, La penihye, La vuzine shalakti, Hagdi azeh, v'yata lo mitzata, Vayehi k'mishlosh chadashim vayugad liyuhuda le'mor zamta tamar kalatecha v'gam hine hara liznunim vayomer yehuda hotziuha v'tisarev U mutse et vehio shalcha el hamicha lemor leish asher elelo anochi haravatomer haker nalimi hachotemet vehaptilim vehamate Aele vayaker Yehuda vayomer tzadka mimeni ki alkein lo nitati ha l'shela v'ni v'lo yasa od l'data vayehi be'et lita v'hine teyomim Bavit na vayehi belita vayiten la yad vatika ham yaledet vatik shor al yado shani lemor ze yatsa reishona vayehi kemeshiv yado vine yatsa achiv Betomer ma paratsta alecha paretz, vayikra shemo paretz. V'achar yatsa achiv asher al yado hashani, vayikra shemo zarach. That's the completion of the fourth aliyah in Hebrew. We'll now study the English translation. Chapter 38, verse 1. Now it came about at that time that Judah was demoted by his brothers. And he turned away until he came to an Adullamite man named Hira. How could Yehuda be demoted by his brothers? The Midrash says that Yehuda was, his brothers were judging him for selling Joseph. That they blamed him for talking them into selling him. And when they saw their father's grief and the length of time of his grief, it was easier to blame Judah than to accept their own responsibility. Another understanding of that was that Judah felt guilty. And he felt he needed to separate himself from his brothers, that he needed to leave the family, and he couldn't deal with the responsibility that was being laid upon him by his brothers as being their leader. Verse 2. And there Judah saw the daughter of a merchant named Shua, and he took her and came to her. And she conceived and bore a son, and he named him Er. Now, the spelling of Er is Ayin Resh. In reverse order, Resh Ayin spells the word evil. Verse 4. And she conceived again and bore a son, and she named him Onan. which is a Hebrew word that has come to mean wasted seed. Masturbation. Verse 5. Once again she bore a son, and she named him Shelah. And he, Yehuda, was in Chezib when she gave birth to him. Now, why did we need to know that Yehuda was not with his wife at that time? Or maybe he was with his wife, and that was the location of Shelah's birth. It's not really clear. But let's take a look at the Hebrew word Chezib. I'm not sure anything will come from this, but the word is Bekezeev. And the gematria of that word is 41, which is the same as mother, Im. But there's a lot of different ways to perceive this, because it could be that the bet and the kaf represent the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. The Zion, the letter Zion, which is also the balance point in the vertical, the flow of Shefa, comes from the upper worlds, and the transition to Malchut is in Zion, which represents Malchut of the spiritual level. And then the Yud Bet is 12. So you have the balance point connection between the 22 Hebrew letters representing the vessels in the higher worlds and the 12 sons of Jacob representing the tribes of Israel, the children of Israel. So this is why the word is there. As my understanding, what I would call a chidush, because I've not read this anywhere, but it's just something that my intuition said this is an important word, because it doesn't make sense that we need to have this in the Torah. Verse 6. And Judah took a wife for Er, his firstborn, named Tamar. Now, Er, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the eyes of Hashem, and Hashem put him to death. And the Midrash is basically saying that the evil of Er was his masturbation, that he went into his wife, but really chose to masturbate rather than to join with his wife, which of course most people think that this is, how can that be? It just doesn't make sense. Verse 8. So Judah said to Onan, come to your brother's wife and perform the rite of the Levirate and raise up progeny for your brother. Now Onan knew that the progeny would not be his, and it came about when it came to his brother's wife that he wasted his semen on the ground in order not to give seed to his brother. This is called sibling rivalry at its worst. Now, what he did was evil in the eyes of Ahashem, and he put him to death also. Then Judah said to his daughter-in-law, Tamar, remain as a widow in your father's house until my son Shelah grows up. For he said, lest he too die, like his brothers. So Tamar went, and she remained in her father's house. Now who's her father? According to the Midrash, Tamar is the daughter of either Shem or Ever. I always get it confused. But Shem is the son of Noah, and Ever is his son. And Tamar, according to the Midrash, is descendant from probably Ever because of ages. But this is also the source, this verse, of the idea of the black widow. That if a woman gets married twice and both of her husbands die, there should not be a third marriage to her for her, because the first husband was her soulmate. And so the tselem, the shadow of the sperm that he injected into his wife, is contesting with anyone else putting sperm into that womb. And that is the reason why the husbands die. That's coming from the Ari and our reincarnation studies. Verse 12. Many days passed, and Shua's daughter, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was consoled, and he went up to watch over his sheep shearers, he and Hira, his Adulamite friend, to Timnah. And it was told to Tamar, saying, behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So she took off her widow's garb, covered her head with a veil, and covered her face. And she sat down at the crossroads that were on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah had grown up, but as for her, she was not given to him for a wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, because she covered her face. So he turned aside toward her to the road, and he said, get ready now, I will come to you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what will you give me that you should come to me? And he said, I will send a kid from the herd. And she said, only if you give me a pledge until you send it. So he said, what is the pledge that I should give you? And she said, your signet, your cloak, and the staff that is in your hand. So he gave them to her, and he came to her, and she conceived his likeness. Then she arose and went away, and she took off her veil, and she donned her widow's garb. And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his Adullamite friend to take the pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. So he asked the people of the place, saying, where is the harlot who was at the crossroads on the way? And they said, no harlot was there. No harlot was here is the language. So he returned to Judah, and he said, I have not found her. And the people of the place also said, no harlot was here. So Judah said, let her take them for herself, lest we become a laughingstock. Behold, I sent this kid, but you did not find her. Judah didn't want to be embarrassed. Now it came about after nearly 3 months that it was told to Judah, saying, your daughter-in-law, Tamar, has played the harlot, and behold, she is pregnant from harlotry. So Judah said, bring her out and let her be burned. She was taken out, and she sent to her father-in-law, saying, from the man to whom these belong, I am pregnant. And she said, please recognize whose signet ring, cloak, and staff are these. Then Judah recognized them, and he said, she is right. It is from me, because I did not give her to my son Shelah. But he no longer continued to be intimate with her. And it came about at the time she was giving birth, that behold, there were twins in her womb. And it came about when she gave birth that he, the infant, stretched out his hand. So the midwife took and bound a crimson thread on his hand, saying, this one came out first. And it came about as he was drawing back his hand, behold, his brother emerged. And she said, with what strength you have strengthened yourself. And he, Judah, named him Perez. And afterwards his brother emerged, the one upon whose hand was the crimson thread, and he named him Zerah. Did you ask yourself the question, why were there twins? And what is the spiritual meaning? Because two of the sons died without children. And the result of that is their souls are left in limbo until they're brought back either through the Levirate marriage or through the chalitza, which is the ritual that we use today because a man shouldn't have two wives, according to the regulations and laws of the Western world. Does anyone have any questions?
Hello?
Yes.
I was wondering, since you said that she had twins because her souls were left in limbo, weren't it naturally, though, there were twins that were born throughout the time before that? I mean, was it always because of something negative that twins came, or?
No, there are twins. There have always been twins.
Right.
But in this particular case, we're talking about a Levirate marriage.
Okay.
The Levirate marriage is between the brother or the father of the male who died without children. And that is the only way that those souls could be brought into the world. And what you'll find if you study the lineage of the Mashiach that leads up to King David, that Peretz is the one of the two twins is the leads to the Mashiach, leads to King David and then to the Mashiach. You know, King David has two sources. He has one that comes from Ruth and the other one comes from Tamar. Just like everybody has two lines of lineage. You have a father and a mother, and those two lines converged in you, and perhaps your brothers and sisters as well. But it's just important to recognize the lineage of the Mashiach is coming from sources that are not necessarily completely holy. I'm not saying that Yehuda's God, because Yehuda is a very righteous man, but he went through a down period, And as a down period, he was attracted to his soulmate, which the Midrash says that Tamar and Yehuda were soulmates. And that's why he was attracted to her. It wasn't that she was just a woman by the way, and that's what he chose, although that was his thinking. But it was because he looked at her, and that relationship between soulmates is instantaneous. And you can see that Tamar is very righteous, because she didn't accuse him. She didn't say, "You're going to burn me because of what you did." She left it up to him. Will you step forward and announce your action and accept the embarrassment of that? Or will you kill me? Will you burn me at the stake, so to speak? I don't know if it's a stake or how they did it in those days. So Tamar was never going to embarrass him publicly. It was his choice. And so she demonstrates her righteousness, as he attests in the Torah. She is more righteous than I.
I have a statement or an observation.
Say again?
I have an observation or statement.
Of course, please. Go ahead.
I think this was a precursor to Esau and Jacob being twins, and that how the birth occurred, and his arm stuck out and went back in, and the other was born, just like Jacob held the heel of Esau. And also the red scarlet thread that was put on the firstborn also takes me back to thoughts of Rachel, and saying that this was a precursor to the Mashiach, which also takes me back to Rachel crying out for children in exile. So I think every, and then also at Tamar, you know, it goes back to her thought, you know, the thought pattern she had. She had to save her husband's lineage. And I think that that's why she's so righteous, just as Lot's daughter with the firstborn, with her, that she's impregnated because she thought the world was destroyed and she wanted to continue the lineage of man, per se.
Right.
So it's all full circle, you know, if you really stop and think about all that. How it's a precursor. These things happen in each generation for a precursor as to what happened prior, you know, as what we're experiencing now through these generations that are coming up, ours and those to come. So, again, I always say your thoughts are the most important thing of your whole makeup, of your being, basically. And I'm trying to understand righteousness in a different aspect. You know, sometimes we think we're righteous because we do the right things, we do the right mitzvahs, we take care of people, we do this, we do that. But it's not just the action that's important, the manifestation. It's the thought, the absolutely first thought that comes to your mind as to why you're doing the fact. And I feel like that's where righteousness really comes from.
Well said. I'm not sure if you asked a question at the last story you asked, or you made a statement.
Same observation.
Well, your observations are very accurate. There are many sages over the centuries that have made all of these connections that you've indicated. And it's very true. Absolutely. If you observe them, they're all related. It's everything. Everything is unified, but we as people see things as being separated one from the other. And, you know, it's good to try and put all these things together and say, oh, you know, they're not coincidence. It's all part of the plan of creation.
Right. Right. And that's why women, the female aspect in this, in relationship and unity, is so important, because they do. And, you know, I'm not putting down men by no means, but women do keep the household together. They do keep the lineages going, you know, and they know that it's the right thing to do, you know.
Correct.
So that's why it's so important to have the female aspects of the male counterpart as well, because they do, their purpose in life that I'm seeing, and I didn't always see it, is to keep families to, from generation to generation, the lineage continuation of that. And some people don't think that it's correct. You know, we all have family members, and a family member in our families that seem to go wayward, you know, the wrong path, you know, but we don't really know what their thoughts were at that point, you know, and it could be a righteous thought. And we just think that you're not doing your job. You're not keeping your family together. You're not, you know, this, that, and the other. So, you know, we just never know, because we don't know a person's mind. We see their actions because it's manifested from the thought, but we really don't know their thinking of the time, you know, the potential, their potential thoughts, you know.
Yes. What you're saying is very valid, and it's essentially we never see the full picture. We're always limited in some aspect, but we think we know, but we can't know, because we can't know someone's thoughts. So that's very rarely, very few people have that capability. There are people who are able, through their psychic abilities, to read some of the thoughts of a person, but another person, most people are able to block those thoughts if they're aware of it, that someone is trying to read their thoughts. But that's a whole different subject that would take too long.
Mm-hmm.
We are out of time, but I wanted to read a paragraph from about Hanukkah, and I don't want to wait till tomorrow, but it's going to be another probably 20 minutes by the time we finish the discussion. So if you have to leave, I can understand, and I hope there'll at least be one person who will stay so we could have the recording.
Yeah,
and then thank you. And this is for the Safaria, from the Safaria website that we started yesterday about Hanukkah. And this is the next paragraph, which is coming from the Talmud in the Tractate of Shabbat, section 21b, and it's verses 7 to 9. Amar Rabba Bar Hana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shnei Zekeinim Hayu B'tzaydan, Echad Asa Kevet Shamay, ואחד עשה כדברי בית הלל, זה נותן דם לדבריו כנגד ברי הגג, וזה נותן דם לדבריו במעלין בקודש ואין. Moridin Tanu Rabbanan Der Hanukkah Mitzvah Lahanicha Al Petah Beito Mi Bachutz Im Hayah Dar Bealiyah Bealiyah Minicha Bachalon Hasmuk Sinuka Lirshut Harabim Buvishat Hasakana Menicha Al Shulchano Yitayo. Rabbi Bar Hana said, that Rabbi Yochanan said, there were two elders in Sidon, and one of them acted in accordance with the opinion of the Beit Shammai, which is one of the leaders of the Talmud, and people either followed Beit Shammai, the house of Shammai, or Beit Hillel, the house of Hillel. And these two people and their followers, the people who agreed with them, they represent the left and the right columns of people, in essence. Beit Shammai, so one acted in accordance with the opinion of Beit Shammai, and one of them acted in accordance with the opinion of Beit Hillel. Each provided a reason for his actions. One gave a reason for his actions. The number of lights corresponds to the bulls of the festival. This is referring to Sukkot, where we start with a larger number and work our way down. We start with 13 bulls and then 12 bulls and then 11 bulls down to 7 bulls. And the other gave a reason for his actions. The number of lights is based on the principle. One elevates to a higher level in matters of sanctity and holiness, and one does not. And this is the argument between the two houses, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. How many candles do you light each day of Hanukkah? You can light only one candle a day. You don't have to add one. But our halakha says we light one the first day, two the second day, three the third day, and so forth. But Beit Shammai teaches that you start the first day by lighting 8 candles and then shrink it down to one on the eighth day. The explanation, how do you reconcile these two opinions? The explanation is that we are in the period of tikkun, of correction, and so we follow the house of Hillel. But after the Mashiach, when we will still light Hanukkah candles as one of the two holidays that will remain, Purim and Hanukkah will remain. So on Hanukkah, according to the house of Shammai, we will light 8 candles the first night and 7 the second night and down to 1 candle on the 8th day. Now let me give you a spiritual explanation that we need to utilize when we're lighting our own candles every night. The first night of Hanukkah, what comes into the universe is the organus. But the organus is also a process. The first night of Hanukkah, the light that comes into the universe is the smallest light. It is the light of Malchut. But it's going into the first vessel, the first candle, which is the Keter, the largest vessel. But it's not the Keter, it's the Bina. It's the largest vessel. So we have the smallest light going into the largest vessel. On the second day, the next higher, stronger light is the light of Yesod, now comes into the light of Bina, to the vessel of Bina, while it pushes out the light of Malchut into the vessel of Chesed. And then on the third day, the next higher, stronger light is the light of Hod. And it pushes the light of Yesod into the vessel of Chesed. And by doing that, the light of Malchut is pushed into the vessel of Gevurah. So you can see how we're doing opposites. We're taking the strongest, the weakest light and putting it into the largest vessel. But each day it's being moved down so that on the eighth day, which is Zot Hanukkah, which is a whole discussion of why it's called Zot Hanukkah. This is Hanukkah. The other 7 days are not Hanukkah? Yes, they are. But the completion of the right vessel, the correct vessel, and the correct light unify on the eighth day. And when you apply this logic, this understanding, why are there, does the house of Shammai say there's 8 candles on the first day? Because the light can flow, the light that comes in, which is the Malchut, all of the 8 lights are coming in and going into their appropriate correct vessels. This argument between the house of Shammai and the house of Hillel that is resolved by saying, well, in Tikkun, we're going to build one vessel at a time as we build our vessels. So it's not the right vessel in the right light, but it will eventually happen that will take place on Zot Hanukkah on the eighth day. So that is what we do according to the halakha. But when Mashiach comes, we will light 8 candles, drawing all of the light of the organus on the first day, and they will all be in the proper vessel. But by the eighth day, where we are only lighting 1 candle, because that last light, which is the light of Bina, will come in to the right vessel, which is the vessel of Bina. Are there any questions? Have a beautiful day. We have 3 classes today. We have our Musar class at 11 o'clock.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Go ahead.
So is it a wrong way, right way? If so, you do misspoke. If you do all 8 at once the first day and then count and decrease it as the days go by, is there...
There are people who do that. There are people who consider themselves righteous, sufficiently righteous to do that. If you feel that that's what you should do, then you have authorization to do it. But yeah. I can tell you, I'm lighting it in the way we've always lit it. 1 okay. candle the first night, 2 candles the second night, and so forth. But understanding this distinction, I think, is important, which is why I felt it was important that we study it today before tomorrow night when we will light the candles. Because when we light candles each night, we're going to describe the light that's coming into the universe and the vessel that it's going to go in. It's a part of the process of Kavanah associated with the lighting of the candles that most people don't know about and most people don't do. But it's an excellent question. So our 11 o'clock class is Mukar, which is, we finished the Tomer Devorah, all 10 chapters, but we will continue with a different aspect of Musar. And then we have a deep Zohar at 4:30. And which will be the last time we start at 4:30 until the Hanukkah is over. Starting Thursday night, that will be at 4 p.m. rather than 4:30, so that we can light the candles as a community. And questions and answers tonight. since I have been remiss the last two nights with the Ari's teachings, I'm hoping to do a short teaching on what the Ari writes about Hanukkah tonight in the questions and answers, depending on how much time we have.
Okay.
So have a beautiful day. Shalom gadol to everyone.
Shalom gadol. Thank you, Hanukkah.
Thank you. Take care, Judy.
Thank you.